And now our feature presentation.
And now, being recorded at the Friendly Neighborhood Comic Expo, it's a very special edition of the most random show on the internet. It's TBK Live! Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a very special edition of TBK Live. Now, I don't know how to put this any other way, but this is a wet dream come true for me. Ladies and gentlemen, joining me today on episode number 69, that's right, 69, is the one and only star of stage, star of screen. You've seen him in such movies as Vulgar, Mallrats, Chasing Amy, Dogma, Hooking Up, and he is Dante from Clerks. Joining me today, the one, the only, Brian O'Halloran.
Yeah, you know what? I actually kept denying your request for me to be on your pod, just waiting for 69 to happen. I was like, because obviously I didn't know you when you were doing your episode 37, which would have been more appropriate for me. But I'll take 69 anytime.
Who wouldn't take 69 right? anytime? Thank you for being on the show, Brian.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Brian was part of the Friendly Neighborhood Comic Expo that we have been plugging the hell out of recently, so I'm glad that you were part of that. How did you think about Arkansas? What did you think about this area?
This area is quite nice, actually. You know, it's very beautiful and very nice people. I mean, yeah, I get it. There's not a lot of happening going on when it comes to your extracurricular activities, but the fact that you and Jake and JJ and all you guys got together and said, we're going to put this together. It takes a lot of cojones, my friend, to financially fund a thing like this. And you know what? You had a pretty decent turnout for a first time kind of, a con. But you had the right kind of support, too. I mean, you had the Paragould Cinema 8 people plugging it for you like crazy. We had a great huge screening of the original Clerks that got so big they moved it to one of their bigger screens. And so I think we had 110, 115 people at it, I think, and a good Q&A. That was the Friday night launch party, so to speak.
Which was awesome, by the way. How does it feel for you watching that movie back over and over again like that?
Well, you know what it is? Normally what I do is I'll come in, I'll introduce a screening, and I'll go do something and then come back, you know, when I know it's like the 89th minute and then sit and then do the Q&A afterwards. But this time it was kind of fun. I sat all the way up top. It had stadium seating, this place. It's a real nice theater, actually. And sat in the back and gave kind of little factoids, kind of like a live commentary track without it being like every 5 minutes giving commentary, but just little factoids here and there that I ran into quite a few people this weekend after that night saying like that was really cool seeing the movie with you commenting things here and there, little factoids. So it was a lot of fun, and like I said, a lot of people here are starving for entertainment, and you guys fulfilled a really cool niche this weekend, and hopefully the word will get out about this. I mean, the problem that you have with a weekend like this, especially when it's sunny in summertime, is you're always fighting the sun. And then on Sunday, not only are you fighting the sun, but you're fighting God because people are in church for so late.
We're fighting the other sun.
Right, exactly. So there's all that type of thing. So otherwise, everything turned out great, man. And you guys had a really great crew here and great staff helping out with whatever I needed, especially. Your fiance was bringing me all around for anything I needed, which was great. I even gave her the key to my room so she could fetch my tube.
I think she laid in her bed.
Did she?
I was wondering what that butt print was. Yeah, she just rolled around in it for a while.
She just wants my pubic hair DNA on her body so she can do some sort of crazy kind of paternal type of suit, probably. I do have his pube hair. Wait a minute. How'd she get that?
Or it could just be that maybe I was wanting it.
Oh,
I had to go there.
I know why you wanted me on the 69 one.
So, yes. Yeah.
Damn you.
Hell yeah. All right. So I figure our listeners want me to ask you about Clerks, so I'm going to save that for last.
You're going to have to hang on, people.
Oh, yeah. Vulgar.
Yes, I am.
Yeah.
Quite often.
Jake introduced me to the movie. I had not seen it yet.
Well, he bought a copy of it that I sell here at the cons. I held one for him because I came with five, and literally within doing the Q&A, the Friday night of Clerks, and then someone had brought up Vulgar, and I talked about it. Like, literally first thing on Saturday morning, four people came up and bought four of the copies. Now, I knew when I got down to my last copy, Jake had come up and said, hey, man, can you hold me a copy of Vulgar? And I said, absolutely. So I text him, like, hey, man, I'm down to my last copy. You still want it? He goes, absolutely. So he has a copy that he has with him and that he's going to be showing, I guess, screening you guys.
He introduced me to it. I would like to know what your thought was when Brian handed you that script. Brian Johnson wrote it as well.
Well, here's the background behind that. I mean, it was Brian Johnson and Kevin Smith. Brian was at Kevin's office, and they were looking at Kevin's poster of Clerks and stuff like that. And the logo of Kevin's company early on was that clown face, you know, and for View Askew. And, you know, Brian Johnson came up with a question to Kevin, which was like, what do you think that guy's background story was? What do you think that guy did to get him to this point where he's standing in high heels, fishnet stockings, and a bustier with clown makeup on? And Kevin said to him, I don't know, why don't you write a story about it? And that's what Brian Johnson did. Brian Johnson, from famous, you know, comic book men fame, decided to write this script. And he finished it, gave it to Kevin. And Kevin's like, wow, this is crazy. Who do you think I should do this? And do you want to do this? And Johnson said, you know what, I think I want to ask Brian to do it. And I was kind of thinking of him when I wrote this. So then, leap forward a little bit, he calls me. I have a script for you. I want you to read. Tell me what you think of it. Just so you know, when I was writing it, I was thinking of you. I was like, all right, great. I meet him down in Red Bank. He hands me the script. I come back home. I'm reading it. Halfway through, there's an event that happens in the film that's very, very disturbing. So disturbing so much that when the film got picked up, and Lionsgate Films sent out Kevin and Brian Johnson to promote it, they went on Howard Stern when Howard Stern was still on free radio. And Howard Stern said to them, he's like, I got to tell you something. You guys sent me an advance copy. I was watching a movie, and I had to stop watching it halfway through. Not because of the quality of the movie. It's just it was that fucking disturbing. I couldn't watch it anymore. And that was the best endorsement we could have ever had. So when he handed me that script and said to me, I was thinking of you when I wrote it, and I got to that part of the script, I literally closed the script and went, what the fuck was that about? Called him on the phone, because this was before the days of cell phones and computers, and said, what the fuck do you mean that you were thinking of me when you wrote this, you twisted fuck? Because the event that happens had like feces involved and all sorts of craziness. So it was bizarre, and that was the first draft. And then the final shooting draft, I think, was a third draft. It was a little tamer, not tame, but tamer than what the original was.
I have to tell you, we've talked about this movie like four times on this show already, so our listeners probably already know where I'm going with this.
Okay.
But I watched that movie for the first time with her, with my fiance.
Right.
We were both kind of mortified at that scene, honestly.
Well, it's definitely not a date movie.
Well, I didn't know that at the time. No one warned me.
Because I'm shocked that she then turned to you and like, you're a freak and I'm out of here.
I mean, it's a crazy scene to watch with anybody, honestly.
Yeah. Because you're all like, what is going on here? Because, you know, the first 20 minutes, it's kind of like a buddy clerk-esque type of buddy comedy.
And you and Brian have great rapport on screen.
Well, he's a really good guy to get along with. I can understand why Kevin and him get along so, so well. Because he does. He has a dark bent to his humor. A definitely twisted thought pattern, which I enjoy. And I love the shock factor that he always brings up. And we have quite a few similar comedy type of vibe that we got along well. And, you know, once again, in this movie, yet again, I'm playing the straight man while he's playing the acerbic, you know, funny wise guy. I mean, that's why Kevin based the real life Randall on Brian Johnson. So it was kind of that same vibe again, a kind of Dante-esque kind of, you know, people pleaser compared to an acerbic wise ass. So that's, I think, another reason why we got along so well.
Did your stage background help you for that role in preparing?
Oh, well, you know what? My theater background helps me through everything that I do when it comes to anything entertainment-based. Doing podcasts, doing, you know, live Q&A. You know, when I did live theater in theaters that didn't have, you know, microphones that you can wear, body mics or something, so you had to learn how to project. You had to take vocal lessons, things like that. So in all that, that helps me in situations like addressing crowds. It helped me, you know, it helps me when I do my stand-up. So it's definitely something that helped me for that role specifically. I did meet with some people of the assault, you know, people who were victims of that, to get a background of the headspace of where a person would be after the incident that happens in the film. and put a lot of work into it. I'm very proud of it. And it's funny because it hasn't been until I've been on the convention scene, which I didn't come on to the convention scene kind of full time till like 2009, that more and more people kept coming up to me. And I started in the horror film convention scene because I'd come out with a film called Brutal Massacre, a very funny comedy with David Naughton and Gunnar Hansen. And it was written and directed by Stephen Mena. And that the Anchor Bay people, the distributor reached out to me to say, would you like to go to these horror cons and do autograph signings and stuff for the film? And that's what got me on that circuit. So when I had more and more of those horror fans coming up like, hey, dude, I loved you in Vulgar. You're awesome. And it was just kind of like, oh, you got to see that? Because it literally had a very, very limited run in theaters, even right. Like even more so than even Clerks did. So when you hear more and more people enjoying it, and the fact that, you know, Brian Johnson and the guys on Tell 'Em Steve Dave podcast bring it up a lot as well, and now he's talking about even doing a sequel to it, which I would love to see where he wants to go with it. I have a couple of ideas what we could do with it.
I'd love to see that, honestly.
Yeah, we'd have, you know, we wanted to take a dinner meeting and see what we can do with that.
Well, let's move on to, I guess, what really brought you to the dance, the Hicks character.
Mm.
How are all of them related?
That's a question for Kevin. I don't know how they are.
I've been wondering that for years. I mean,
I have scenarios in my head that it might be, but the definitive answer is always Kevin because he's the writer and creator of that world. But every one of them, you know, and there's even the executive that's in Chasing Amy, we call Sean Hicks. You know, that's what we called it. But in the credits, it's just executive number one, TV executive number one. But it's all weird how it is related like that. I think it's just a running joke about how, you know, maybe in Jersey we're all a bunch of Hicks. I have no idea.
All right. So out of the Viewisk universe so far that you've done, have you had a line that's made you uncomfortable to say? I know that Jeff Anderson talks about the scene where he's reading off all the porn titles that he's like, hey, I don't know if I want to do this as many because of his mom and seeing the film. Was there any of those lines that made you just uncomfortable?
No, not really. I mean, I remember when first screening, because we got VHS copies of the first Clerks when we were done as kind of like a thank you for doing it. Once the final cut was done, they did a whole bunch of dubbed copies of the first take of it. And I remember taking the VHS home and going to my mom's house and showing the movie to my mom and my girlfriend and her sister and a couple of other friends, and knowing the whole part about snowballing coming up and all this other stuff. And I felt uncomfortable about that. Like I was sitting, like she was sitting on, my mother's sitting on the couch. I was like sitting on the floor to the side of the TV and other people were in other seats and couches. And so I knew coming up to that, I was like, oh, weird, because, you know, we grew up Irish Catholic. My mother, like my whole family is born and raised in Ireland, and they came over in 65, and then I was born in 69. So my two older brothers are Irish. My mother is Irish and still has the accent, the whole nine. She goes back to Ireland and England every year. So I was just like, oh, this is so awkward. And oddly enough, she laughed even more so than anyone else in the room, which made me uncomfortable even more. So I'm like, well, why is she laughing about snowballing? That's so odd, because I had never heard about it until I read the script. And so I didn't know how people would respond to that whole act, so to speak.
In the long cut of Clerks.
69.
How did you feel about the scene of Dante getting shot at the end?
Oh, I hated it when I read it. When I read the script, I was living in New Brunswick. A bunch of friends of ours were renting a house in New Brunswick while they were going to Rutgers University. And the NBA finals were going on and the Knicks were in it against the Bulls or something like that. And I was up in my room reading the script while my friends were watching the finals down in the living room. And I'd come down trying to tell them, oh, guys, wait. There's this funny joke. You got to listen to this scene. And they're like, shut up, man. Patrick Ewing's on the line. He's about to shoot a three free throw. And I'm like, come on, man. You know he's going to miss anyway. And he does. And I tell him a line and I'd run back up. And I remember being at the end like, this is a funny movie. And then reading the whole, you know, leading up to point of view outside the store, dark, someone comes in, cameras pan to the floor, camera pans up to reveal Dante. Dante says, hey, man, I'm sorry, we're closed. And whip pan over to a robber shooting him and both. And I remember like, what? Why would you kill? Oh, my God. And then I got the irony that Kevin was going for, the seriousness that, you know, this is what happens every day in convenience stores all across the world, if not the country. And that these guys called in on his day off with all the shit he went through, then gets killed. Wow. What a serious way to end that film. But it didn't last until the one screening when after it was seen by Bob Hawke, who then took it to John Pearson, who was a producer's rep who repped people like Spike Lee and Jim Jarmusch and a whole bunch of other great filmmakers, said, like, you can't do that. You're just going to piss off your audience. It's a comedy, man. This is a straight-up comedy. Keep it at that. Otherwise, you're just going to have your audience mad at you and pissed off that you've killed them off. So I invented it. They were like, no, we're going to do this. And we shot the scene, and it was so funny that in an early kind of way, I was kind of right.
All right, so on top of things, you know, everyone knows the hockey scene on the roof.
Of course.
Talked about. Two questions. Number one, did you actually climb the ladder in the skates?
No, I climbed it and then put the skates on.
I was gonna say, because in the long cut, it actually shows climbing up in the skates. I'm thinking that's just.
I don't think
nuts.
You see. I don't think it's me. You see. I think it's the other teammates.
Yeah.
That you see.
I'm just thinking that's just fucking crazy.
Well, they did it. I mean, and I think I was actually. I think I was at the top, holding the top of the ladder so it doesn't slide.
Oh wow.
As they're climbing, but yeah, they did it.
You an actual hockey player?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Really?
I was a goalie.
No joke.
But it's street hockey and very, very few times on ice, but mostly street.
Favorite team?
I still have my teenage pad still sitting in
the
storage room at my mom's.
Favorite team?
She's always screaming at me. Huh?
Favorite team?
Favorite team is the Rangers. I'm a season ticket holder for the
Rangers.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I share tickets with two other pairs of guys, so there's three of us that divide this season. I get in about 12 games to 14 games a season, depending on what my schedule is. As a matter of fact, I'll be picking games soon enough and dividing them yet again.
Oh, seeing a game at Madison Square Garden is just
especially since the remodel. The remodel is phenomenal, absolutely phenomenal now. So it took three summers to do the remodel, but now it's worth it. And even concerts now. I mean, the seats are super comfortable. There's every single choice of concession you can think of. Sushi, kosher stuff, deli, sausage boss. There's all sorts of crazy pizzas, just everything you can think of.
There's better food in that venue than my old hometown.
There is probably better food. There's a place there that sells lobster rolls that are fucking killer, dude. Killer.
Holy hell.
$20, but
worth it though.
Yeah, they're worth it because they do load it up with lobster claw meat and stuff like that. So
nice.
It's worth it.
All right. So I'll ask you about those couple of stage questions and then I figure we'll probably talk about what's coming up.
Sure.
For the view. All right, so I know you've done stage. I know you've been in The Crucible. How hard was that?
The Crucible wasn't too hard. I mean, Miller is a great writer, and since that's a large, large cast, everybody's on has their big scenes, or two or three big scenes, and you're on and off pretty quickly. The thing about The Crucible is pace. In most things, it's like doing Mamet or doing Aaron Sorkin. It's all about pacing. And I have a great friend who's a phenomenal director. His name is Ken Wiesinger. And he directed me in A Few Good Men. And then The Crucible was directed by another great woman friend of mine named Lee Gossett. And she's an actual drama teacher at a Catholic school back in New Jersey. And she's a phenomenal actress who I've worked with before. So I have this circle of friends who are actors, writers, producers, and stuff in theater that we're always pulling from each other. We're kind of like a repertory group without an actual building. Now, I'm a member of the New Jersey Repertory Theater down in Long Branch. I've done like four or five shows of theirs over the years. And that's my first love as an actor, has always been live stage. I mean, When I talk at acting schools or film courses in colleges, I talk about how the mediums of entertainment, you know, you have the film medium, the television medium, the stage medium, and the radio medium or voiceover medium. And I break it down like this. Film is the director's medium because the director calls what shot they're going to use, what kind of take. You may like take four as an actor, but he likes take three just because the background came right and the timing of so-and-so walked across, so you're not in control. Television is the writer's medium. This writing team gets to write episode after episode and be creative about these characters every single week. So that's, if you want to be a writer, that's what you want to be in. You want to be in television because you're constantly writing.
Right.
While stage is the actor's medium. Once you're done with rehearsals with your director and then you go up, that's it. You know, you're on stage live. There's no cut. Wait, I'm sorry, I fucked this up in front of a live audience. You're doing it, so you got to, and you're working with a team. It's a collaborative effort, and you can tweak it from night to night. Something if you're doing a comedy, if a joke falls flat, you tweak it and work whatever it is for the next night that you do it right. And then you play games on stage. If you're doing a long run, like your average contract on Broadway is 6 to 8 months as a contract player. So to make it fresh for you, you'll do odd things with your castmates to spice things up. Like instead of water in the thing, it's vodka to fuck with people, you know, things like that. the fake bourbon, which is supposed to be iced tea, is real bourbon tonight. Or you're throwing different things at people. So it keeps you sharp. So that's the actor's medium. And then radio and television and voiceover work is the ugly people's medium. I'm just
Thank you. I'm kidding.
I always throw that in there. But no, that's another one where as an actor you can work your vocal talent, which is a very different talent to have. You know what I mean? It's not like anybody can do vocally in television or on film or on stage the same that you do when you have the setup in a studio and mic and voicing over cartoons and stuff.
How did you enjoy the Clerks animated run?
Oh, I loved it. I figured
that would be easy.
That was the dream that I wish like really came true, is the fact that that show went as long as, let's say, The Simpsons have been, or obviously Family Guy, things like that. That would have been the paycheck.
Come out around the same time as Family Guy too?
Yeah, they were in the middle of being canceled that first time. I think Family Guy was in the process of being canceled the first time while we were starting up what we were doing, which was another thing that kind of caused ABC to like, well, cartoons are being canceled. We don't need cartoons. Meanwhile, Dilbert was doing really, really well on UPN, and UPN really wanted a full season of Us, which would have been 15 to 24 episodes like that. But then ABC found out who owns the rights to Clerks, said no, we want to keep it in house, and made a deal with Kevin for that. I've also done other voiceover work. I've worked on the Pokemon TV show and the movies. I've done a couple of exterior characters, like day player type characters when they land on a new planet or new things like that. But if you look on my IMDb, don't ask me what episodes, don't ask me what titles, because it's all Japanese to me. It really is, because these kids are like, you were in Pokemon? I'm like, yes. Who are you? I'm like, I don't know. Squirrel's poop. I have no idea who I played. So it was that.
Somebody's catching Brian's character.
Right, exactly. Now. So someone go on IMDb. You'll see there's like two or three episodes, and then the movie, the Zorlock movie, whatever it was, that I played a couple of characters on that. Because I know the main head casting producer, it's based in New York. The Japan episodes come to New York in Japanese, and then we redub them again in English.
Let's move on to Clerks 2. Sure. And then we'll get, I have to tell you, the scene where the dance scene's about to begin and you're looking at Rosario Dawson is one of the most, I don't know, this is going to make me sound gay, and I hope you're okay with that.
No, by all means. I thought about it before.
It looks like you are just looking very lovingly at that point. Aww. At her. I mean, it comes across that way. I was like, that's the most romantic look I've ever seen in a movie.
Do you know what the trick was?
They were looking into a mirror?
No. Yeah, exactly. Right? Oh, Brian, you're so beautiful. I love you so much, Brian. It was actually, I was looking through the fucking sun, which I even complained. I'm like, why am I looking towards where the sun is right there? Like, I can't even keep my eyes open. And then the one line producer told me a trick. He's like, look, I know you want to squint because of the pain of it. Because then they put a scrim, a very thin covering to kind of diffuse the light. She said, look straight to the sun with your lids closed. Right. And look for it like, you know, 15, 20 seconds. Then look where you want to look and open your eyes. It won't hurt you anymore. And it did. It worked. So it worked like it. So I was just surviving the pain of staring at the sun. Now, don't get me wrong. Rosario was off camera at the side. And I was just like, hey, what's going on? So that part of it was it. But most of it was because the sun was right there.
Out of all the characters in the movie history, you have had the prettiest women for any character in the Clerks movies.
I know. I have very compromising pictures of Kevin, so he has to be No, I don't know what it is, man. I mean, Kevin has always said that the Dante character is the clerk he really is, while Randall is the clerk he wish he could be. So I guess for the character he really is, he wants to have the sweet-ass women for. It's been kind of funny that, you know, and even Randall brings it up in the second movie. Like, you always have two hot chicks fighting over your hideous fucking chud face.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I'm very thankful for that to be. But at the same time, it's very awkward when one of the women was his real wife.
Oh, okay.
You know, and she's straddling me on a swing, facing me while we're making out, and, you know, and we're filming it. In any other job atmosphere, that's a lawsuit waiting to happen. There's some sort of sexual harassment thing. I want you to make out with my wife while she straddles you on a swing and I film you. Go. I'm like, hello, some lawsuit about this, but she's a very beautiful woman. And at the same time, I'm just like, oh, God, because, you know, a woman straddling you, making out with you, I'm kind of like, please don't let the launch code start. You know what I'm saying? I do not want the whole war game scenario going on.
Oh, shit. You think he was just sitting in the back watching it going, yeah, this is good.
I always make that joke. Like, for the first few takes, I looked over and there wasn't even a crew. It was just him behind the monitor going, keep going.
That's awesome. What was it like kissing Rosario Dawson? Because I'm kind of jealous of that, honestly.
Oh, yeah. I think I flubbed things in the takes just to have more takes with her.
I can't blame
she's,
you.
But here's the thing. She's gorgeous. She's absolutely smoking hot. Really cool. Really, like, smart ass. You throw wisecracks at her, she throws them right back at you. And she's super nerdy in the sense that she's into comics. She's into all this stuff. And now, within the last, especially the last 8 years, she's been very political and active in the political scene, Latino vote movement, and things like that. And so she's an all-around amazing package, just complete amazing package. There was no way that no one who works with her can't fall in love with her.
Did you think her and the guy who plays Elias, and I can't think of his name.
Trevor Furman.
There we go. Was going to fit into the cast as well as they did.
Well, she did the first read-through of the script. She read it perfectly in the sense like she got what we were going for. And as a matter of fact, at the end of that reading, Kevin had asked her, like, seriously, what made you say yes to doing this project? And she said, you want me to tell you the truth? I wanted to see how you were going to do this donkey scene. Swear to God. That's when we knew we had her. I was like, you're the type of girl we're looking for. Anybody, any girl who's like, I want to see how this donkey scene works out is a fucking chick that can work with us. So, yeah, that's the thing about her that was just, you know, so awesome.
What about Trevor? Did you think he was
Trevor? Trevor was – he came in with this odd take. He was slow on the uptake in a sense, but it was because he was developing that really weird canter to his delivery that made him – excuse me – that made him so socially awkward on film. We were worried because he was being very slow in his delivery. And that's Kevin. What Kevin doesn't like is slow delivery. He's another one that's kind of like Mamet and Sorkin and stuff. Like he likes his dialogue really popping. It wants to be kernels of corn on hot oil. Let's go. Bang, bang, bing, bang, bang. Because that's his comedy. So we were kind of getting nervous while getting closer to shoot date of him catching on. But then we caught what he was doing. Then he nailed it. And then it was like perfect. And funny side note, he is currently the one who is developing the Jay and Silent Bob video game that we'll be working on this year.
I didn't even know that.
What? Yes, that's right.
It's an exclusive, guys. I don't know if that's been talked about or not.
Kevin's put that out on the interwebs. It's a Jay and Bob Super Punch or something like that.
Is it going to be an app? Is it going to be a cell phone game? Or
it's going to be all platforms. They're developing it for all. Yeah, they had a huge... it's not Kickstarter. It's the one for video games. I forget the name. It's like a Kickstarter, but for video game projects. And he had it on that for a while, and they raised way beyond than what their startup money was. And then they got investors from Silicon Valley to kick in as well. So that's something that I'm waiting to hear from him as well, because I wanted to be involved in it. Jeff Anderson involved in it to voice for Randall. Other characters are being signed on board to work on it. And we'll be going into the studio recording that as well soon.
That's awesome. I didn't even know about that, and that just makes me even more excited. Yeah. The scene where they pan out, do you think that was the last scene with you as that character?
I hope not. I mean, he's written a script with it.
We're going to get to that. But at that moment, I mean... Where
oh, at that time as we're filming?
Yeah, when it fades to black and white
there
from
was,
color.
I'm not going to lie to you. There, after we...
Spoiler alert.
We wrapped... cut. That literally wasn't the last scene that we actually filmed in the movie.
Right.
The last scene was actually us on the roof building the new sign was the last scene. And when the cut happened, it was kind of like, wow, is this... You know, you kind of got a little choked up about it because we didn't know where we were going with it. You know, we're leaving it off where... We buy the store as Jay and Silent Bob as silent partners, no pun intended. And and then, you know, Rosario Dawson's character, Becky, knocked up with my hideous fucking shadow of a love child. So it leaves to see when Kevin came to me and said, I want to do a Clerks 3. I was just like, what? And at first, the first thought in his mind was, I want to do Clerks 3 and I want to do it as a stage play on Broadway. And that's
fuck
literally,
yes.
That's literally, that's a literally fastball right down my fucking, you know, right in my wheelhouse of, oh, absolutely. Let's totally take this on Broadway for 8 months. But then he worked out all the logistics of it. And plus he called when he emailed Jeff Anderson, he's like, are you high? You've been smoking way too much weed. He goes, no, seriously, I think we should do this on Broadway. And he's like, now I think you've moved on to crack. So, you know, I can't see Jeff doing that. And I can't see, I'd love to see Jay Muse do. I mean, he does live shows all the time now. But to see someone confined for 8 months in the city doing the same, you know, show again and again and again.
Right.
I can't see these cast of people going.
And Kevin's job would be kind of easy.
Well, he'd just have to direct it once and that's it. And then you'd have, you know, they have a stage manager. That's what happens on Broadway. You have a stage manager that takes over for the rest of the run.
You know, if they ever remake Noises Off, you need to be in that.
Oh, I was going to be in the production of it, but my schedule couldn't fit in it.
That's one of the I love that movie.
Yeah,
and you just seem
like
the perfect...
Great. If it's a great play, too.
It's a great play,
if you ever get a good production company to put on, it's a very hilarious play.
I just see you in that movie and play so much. I don't know why. But that's one of my favorite movies of all
time. It's a great play, too. So I would do both. Yeah. I would do the play or the movie.
Okay, so Clerks 3, any news on that yet? Have you heard any scheduling for filming?
No, because it's been pushed back so many times. We were supposed to shoot it last year. But through logistics of distribution and other logistics, it didn't work out. But in the process of finding locations for Clerks 3, Kevin found this mall in south of Philadelphia that he was like, oh, man, I would love to do a Mallrats here, because there was a scene from Clerks 3 that was going to be filmed at a mall. But then the guy said, well, if you're going to do this, you better do it quick because we're tearing this building down by December. So he'd started to rush into doing a Mallrats 2 movie, which was Mallbrats. Didn't get it done in time, got ran into logistics, and then the building had to come down. So, but then they found another mall that said, we'll give you our mall to do, and we're not tearing it down. And it's a legit mall. It's at the Exton Mall, which is in Exton, PA, south of Philadelphia yet again. And that's hopefully the plan. And that's how the running thought was, oh, we're going to do it in October. Then we got pushed back. And then we're going to do it in January, this past January. Now we're going to do it in April. And now the stop of information of anything. Now I figured out why, because he just announced a couple of weeks ago that he's doing it as a television series. So he had called me a while ago saying, I have good news and bad news. I said, well, give me the bad news first because I want to end this conversation on a high note. He goes, well, the bad news is we're going to postpone Clerks 3 for later. I was like, aw. And he's like, but good news is I want you to be part of Mallrats 2. I'm like, all right, I'm in. And he had called up all the previous cast members to take a selfie holding up the two digits saying number 2, that they were a part of it. So we got Jerry Lauren Adams. We got Michael Rooker. You got Jason Lee. He got Jeremy London. He got everybody who was from the previous cast to do that, and he would post them on his Instagram account. If you go far back enough in Kevin's Instagram account, you'll see everybody putting up the number 2 symbol. The only one he didn't get at the time was Ben Affleck, which I still don't know if he's going to be a part of it. I personally think it'd be funny if Ben were to return, but dressed as Batman, standing next to Jay and Silent Bob, where Silent Bob is still dressed as Batman, and Silent Bob just leaning over and saying, I wear it better. Something of that nature.
Oh, that would make perfect sense.
Your friend is calling us.
Oh, put him on speaker.
Okay.
Jake's calling Brian, everybody.
Hey, Jake, you're on the podcast with Richard and I. What's up?
I have really bad news, and we got to supervise an emergency.
Okay. I will get down there in a few. Where are you right now? Okay, yeah, we're in the panel room. Oh, okay. Sounds good. We'll see you in a second.
I don't know what's happening, but you never know what's going to happen doing live shows, everybody.
Jake is coming up here with some emergency news. Not public emergency, like we have to flee the building. Just we got to talk. And I'm like, oh, okay.
All right. So
that mic's going to eventually go live, and he's going to sit
there. That mic
there.
Is already live. It's just muted right
now.
All right.
So, yeah. Well, there you go. So anyway. Now I'm all like, what's this?
Now it's like, ooh.
So what we were talking about, we were talking about Ben Affleck.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that would be funny if Ben showed up as Batman.
Because I assume Kevin's got some sort of blackmail on him constantly anyway. We talked about that after he showed up.
I don't know
Clerks
about
too.
That.
I was like, wait, was that Affleck? What the hell?
No, but Affleck was great. I mean, it was funny because the day that he showed up, production was starting slightly early that day. And lunch was like this catered truck that was really good all the time. But this day that he was showing up, we had this giant soup, like, you know, food truck,
yeah.
But a giant high-end sushi
food nice.
Truck. So lunch was sushi that day because Mr. Affleck showed up. And then Affleck rolls up on this brand spanking new Bentley, right?
Shit.
That, listen to this.
That's Geely money.
Listen to this. No, listen to this bullshit rich people problem bullshit.
First world problem.
That the dealer gave him.
The fuck?
Exactly. I was like, what do you mean gave you? I was just like, how about losing it to me? We can play some poker in the back, and you bet the Bentley. I'll bet my Honda Accord at the time. And we'll see who wins, bitch.
Just gave it to him?
Yeah. And here's the funny thing. So we shoot Affleck's scene, and he was done way before even we took lunch. So
and here comes the guy panicking.
All right, here we go.
A little
apparently some
coming
major
down his
announcement
pants.
Coming in.
Here we go.
Don't tell me Kevin Smith's plane went down.
This is about your plane.
What? What about my plane?
There's a Black Lives Matter movement, and they've shut down both bridges to Memphis.
Yeah, but I don't leave until tomorrow.
Holy ballsacks.
It's Memphis. It's going to be violent. We're going to have to be very careful tomorrow.
Oh, motherfucker, I know people. It's all good. Oh, I didn't know that. I'll call Nashville tomorrow. And I got some people, y'all.
So,
I mean, your asses are fucking terrible, but shit, me and Santiago, we'll be fine, man. We'll be fine.
Guys, this has turned into like we've got a small crowd here. This is great.
Really? They took over what? The airport? What,
the bridge. The bridge going into business by the pyramid?
New bridge and old bridge.
Son of a twat waffle.
Look, it's tonight. I don't fly out until tomorrow morning. Early then. Brothers ain't getting up super early to block a bridge. I'm sorry. They'd be like, I'll do it after Judge Judy. I'll be over there. We'll block that bridge. I ain't getting out. I ain't standing blocking no bridge at 12 in the afternoon, burning my skin. Oh, ain't happening. That's what's going to happen with that.
And this show will be live after
Judge
Judy.
By the way, I don't want no emails and people like, why are you talking like that? That's all fucked up. Look, yo, it's jokes. Relax. Hey.
Have you seen his movies?
Yeah, really?
I mean, shit.
Come on.
Clerks 2. That's all I'm going to say. Randall's taking it back.
That's Clerks 3. Oh, Clerks 2. Yeah.
I thought you just was like,
Kevin Richardson, what a great comic actor and voiceover actor. He does a lot of stuff with Family Guy and everything. When he came in and did Porch Monkey, it was just genius. And it's so funny because every African-American fan that comes up to my table is like, by the way, yo, that Porch Monkey scene was fucking hilarious. And other white people in line are always like, oh, what did he just say? I'm like, it's all cool. He's taking it back. But wow, that's pretty interesting news.
Yeah.
That'll
That's
be fine.
Crazy.
Like I said, I have a very early flight tomorrow morning. So by the time we're back on the bridge, I doubt there's going to be an issue. If it's an issue, I don't know. Let's rent a canoe or something.
And there are backways into town, but geez.
That sounded dirty for the 69
right?
episode.
Yeah, this is episode 69, by the way.
Awesome.
How
about
that, huh? You were wondering why I kept saying, no, I don't want to do the episodes until I got to 69.
Nah, yeah.
I was all over it. I was like, 69? Oh, yeah. Slap on some Barry White, and we're going to go to town.
I got to we'll do some rapid-fire questions. Did you ever think you and the Randall character would have ended up together in the movies at some point?
Would ever hooked up together?
Yeah, because yeah.
What the fuck kind of question
Well, I know,
that?
Right? I know. But this kind of seems like one of those things where it's like in the cartoon, you guys end up married at that one point.
That's a cartoon.
But, you know, I'd look at it as real, damn it.
At the same time, the cartoon covered the scene in Clerks 1 that we didn't get to see at the funeral home.
That is true, the missing scene that we couldn't do.
Does that mean the cartoon series is canon to the story?
Okay, do we have a outbreak with a fucking monkey and shit? Come on, bro. That's what was the bonus of doing the Clerks cartoon, is we could do such crazy bullshit like building the quicker stop across the street. You know what I mean? So that's why when they didn't pick it up and so to say canceled it and then we couldn't take it to other places to do, it really did break my heart. I really did was like celebrating like I was going to be rolling in Simpson money. You know what I'm saying? Like 20 years I'll be doing this shit in my nakedness. It's awesome.
Yeah, still technically you are.
We could have been.
Yeah.
But no, we never thought that in the live actions particularly would we ever.
I know people have asked about the questions, is the Randall character, is his sexual preference men? I know that's been brought up before.
Well, I mean, Kevin was tweeting about Clerks 3 that who do you think his girlfriend would be, talking about the Clerks 3 script. So,
and someone probably tweeted Captain America.
Right, you know, something like that. So it's those type of things like, you know, and it's funny because even in the first movie, when he tells Veronica what's going on, and like, you know, that Dante wants to break up with you. And he even says as she gets up, look, I don't know anything about women. Like he says that. And that's when like, oh, he must be gay. You know, there was a lot of people doing that. So I don't know. It would never happen. All right. Next rapid question.
Well, we always
shall
ask.
I say vapid question?
Well, we're going to ask you some nerd debate topics we do on the show.
Nerd debate.
So if you're cool with that.
Nerd debates. That's what I make my money in. Nerd debate.
You think Batman's a mama's boy?
Is Batman a mama's boy?
Yeah, because Alfred still makes his food. Tucks him in.
No,
you know, sort of.
That's like saying our oil baron's fucking mama's boy. Anybody who has a servant is a mama's boy?
Well, no, he's technically raising him.
Okay.
That would be technically his parent still.
No, he's not a mama's boy.
See, that I was saying that I feel like Bruce Wayne can't make a Hot Pocket even at
this
point.
Who wants to eat a fucking Hot Pocket? Have you ever heard Jim Gaffigan's whole shtick, that comedian's shtick on Hot Pockets?
I don't think I've heard the Hot Pockets.
Oh, thing. Dude, you got to Google Jim Gaffigan's Hot Pocket. It's hilarious.
That caught me completely off guard.
Sorry.
No, you're good. Worst Star Wars movie.
Worst Star Wars movie?
Yes.
God. I'm having a lot of people show me the seven fingers, but I have issues with seven. I'm not going to lie on that one. But it's not the worst. I got to say Phantom Menace in that sense. I mean, I liked, you know, Nielsen's portrayal of Obi-Wan and stuff, or not Obi-Wan, not Qui-Gon, but I don't know. There's a lot of different reasons for debate. I mean, I can even say Jedi for that matter, because the argument for the original three, when Kevin brought into the clerk script about how, you know, Empire was better than Jedi, that was my true feeling, that it was like, here it was the war that was going on and this, that, and the other thing. And, you know, Vader, you know, reveals that he's his father and all this other stuff. And so, you know, maybe Jedi, maybe seven. I have no idea. I mean, I have issues with seven, but probably, I don't know, episode one, maybe.
Any role that you auditioned for that you really, really, really wanted that you didn't get?
I usually try to delete those out of my memory immediately. And I'm not kidding. Like, I have a limited amount of RAM. There's no expansion slots left in my head. God, what did I audition for? I mean, I literally auditioned for the Clerks TV show when they started that up. There was a Clerks sitcom that, after Clerks got picked up and went through their whole routes and we were done with Mallrats, I think, I was out in L.A. Interviewing with agents. And this one agent, Gold Marshak agent, I think his name was, the agency was called. He said, like, oh, you're obviously going to go in for the Clerks sitcom, right? And I was just like, what? He's like, I haven't even heard of this. He goes, yeah, Don Rio, a very big-time writer-producer in sitcoms, is producing and writing it. I'm like, oh, no. He'll send me in for it. That's Dante, obviously. And then I started calling other people from the cast and Kevin himself. I'm like, Kevin, he didn't even know that this was going on. So Don Rio, who was working for Warner Brothers at the time, got the license to do the sitcom from Miramax to do the sitcom and auditioned and didn't get it. And some unknown guy got the role of Dante, and Jim Brewer, the comedian, got the role of Randall. The one thing Kevin did, he signed on as an executive producer, saw how shitty it was, and pulled out of it really quick, and said, look, you can't have the Jay and Silent Bob characters. And so they had, like, it was a convenience store, but an ice cream shop next door, and it was really weird, because Carrie Russell was the girlfriend, Veronica, at the time, the girl who played Felicity, if you those out there as well.
Yeah, because I could see her playing that. Jeez.
You can Google Clerks sitcom, and that's out in the ether there.
After Jim Gaffigan's stand-up, look that up, because it's bad.
Exactly. It's terrible. And it's like the sets are like that bubblegum kind of Saved by the Bell.
It looked like Peter Engel produced it.
Yeah, it was like the Saved by the Bell type of thing. I was waiting for Screech to come on stage. As Jay, no less. And so, that's something that I'm glad I didn't get. But at the weird time, I was like, how the fuck do I not get Dante? Things like that. I mean, there's tons of things. But like I said, I always delete it out of my head.
Brian, we want to thank you.
No, thank you.
Is there anything you would like to add to our listeners sitting at home right now?
If you guys want to reach out to me, I'll be releasing my own podcast soon enough this year. I know people have been hearing it for about a year now that I've been talking about it. It's because I was trying to tie it into the producing and the production of Clerks 3 and then Mallrats. And being that we've been pushed back so many times, I've been delaying mine. I have about 15 episodes recorded, so I may release them like Netflix releases seasons of like fucking House of Cards and shit. Just blast them out there. But that's the O'Hala Ranch. You'll soon be seeing that or hearing that soon.
Is that going to be on Kevin's network?
I believe so, yeah. Awesome. I've been talking to Will from their network and a few other people. I mean, Kevin asked me to be a part of it, so I would assume I'd have to be a part of it. And then if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, Instagram, it's Brian, the letter C, O'Halloran, all together. Brian C, O'Halloran C for my middle initial, Christopher. On Twitter and Instagram, if you want to do Facebook, I have a Facebook, official Facebook page. It says it in the icon picture message. It's my face with red letters that say official Facebook page. And you'll be seeing more stuff on that. Twitter is the best way to find out what's going on. I'm always on the road and coming to more cons near you.
Brian, thank you so much for coming to Paragould, joining us with the Friendly Neighborhood Comic Expo. Thank you for doing this show.
Richard, thank you. Jake, thank you. And JJ, all you guys, thank you for having us all out here. It was a lot of fun. And seriously, you guys got over a huge hump on your first con. And next year you have all these lessons to now tweak it.
And we appreciate all the advice you've given us this weekend
as
well.
Not at all. It's been a pleasure.
Guys, that was Brian O'Halloran joining us here on TBK Live. Brian, have you ever seen the movie Manos the Hands of Fate?
What?
Manos the Hands of Fate.
Oh, yeah.
The worst movie ever made.
Right.
We close the show every episode with Torgo and the song Take Us Home Tonight. So, ladies and gentlemen, Torgo, You know what to do. Take us home tonight.
You cannot stay. The master would not approve.
Just like a runner said, be my little baby.